Yes.
Still tastes like burger. All right. Nick New York. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Flicks of Doom, Episode 6. We are going to be talking about quite a bit of stuff today, and we actually have a special guest on today, so I'll start with him. We have Robin Burge from the Media Junkyard Podcast.
Wolverines!
Yeah!
Who has also had probably as many guest appearances as Britney Spears has STDs.
Thank you for being another notch on my bedpost.
And we also have our regulars, obviously, Eve and Justin. Eve?
Yeah.
Never tell me the odds.
All right, so as I said, we have a lot of stuff to cover today, so we're going to go ahead and kick it off to the news really quickly. All right, so first story, James Cameron may film Avatar 2 and 3 back-to-back. What are we all thinking about this? I mean, it's kind of like a Spider-Man move. Not that they actually even got into filming for that, but they also did that with what? Back to the Future.
Matrix.
Did they do that with Lord of the Rings? Yeah, the Lord of the Rings, too. So, I mean, that's quite a few movies that have done this. You guys think it's going to be possible, especially with the huge amount of editing that they're going to have to do for each movie? I mean, how far is that going to push it off? What do you think, Robin?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I kind of not a fan of them having a sequel to Avatar. I mean, what more to do with that story? I mean, are they going to? What's the plan? Is to take it off the planet, right? Or is it to keep it on the planet?
I believe it was.
I haven't read the latest.
I believe his first. Kind of plan was to do another moon of or something like that, another planet that was very close by. I thought it was a moon. Justin, do you remember?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah, it was another moon off of, because that was a moon off of a planet, I think, or something like that.
That's no moon.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I'm not really a fan of them doing a sequel to it anyway. I with big budget special effects. I mean, I'm just thinking Matrix is going to happen. I mean, where the first was, you know, awesome, and the second and third are just going to be like a double punch of suck.
I feel like when they film these movies back to back, for the most part, it just becomes one big movie that they release in two parts. It doesn't feel like two movies that stand on their own. For example, with the Matrix. I think everyone can agree that middle film, while it probably was actually better than the final film, it just was a bridge. And the same thing with the Lord of the Rings trilogy. The middle movie is actually my favorite, but it does just feel like a bridge movie. And so I feel like if you film it together, Avatar 2 and 3 together, I think the same thing is going to happen. But it probably would make sense financially for them to do both movies at the same time, because, you know, they're in like a big, right, motion capture room, and, you know, it's like, all right, we'll just stay in this room for however long we have to be here.
Actually,
instead of trying to get them, like, the actors back again, you know what I mean?
I actually think that that makes sense financially, but I also want to point out Back to the Future, I think, is different than that. I think the second movie was better than the third.
Well, with Back to the Future, they made it a point to make two separate movies. Like, so the third movie was in the West, you know, like the Wild West, and the second one was supposed to be futuristic. And as far as I recall, they had two separate teams. Like, they had the second movie unit, and then while the second movie unit was finishing up, like, all post-production, they had everybody doing the third movie in a different place, and it had like very different scripts, and it was like two very different stories, whereas, say, something like Lord of the Rings, it's really one big story that happens, and they just kind of chop it up.
Yeah, I think that might have a lot to do with how the original creator and writer kind of came up with the story, though. Because I think when they made Matrix, I don't think they were like, oh, we need more of these and make something up. I think it was more like he wrote the entire thing and they were like, okay, this is the first movie part of it. Do you think mm-hmm. this will work? And they're like, yeah. And then they were like, okay, well, this sold well enough. Let's go ahead and do 2 and 3. So I think it Lord of the Rings obviously is that way because they're based on books that were already written.
Right.
So, I mean, and the books are continuous. Like, the book 2 would be still considered a bridge as well because I think it's getting you to the third book in a way.
I mean, with The Matrix, it's like, you know, the whole thing was about waking up, you know, and then at the end of the movie, you were like, awesome, he's going to bring it all down. And then, you know, when the sequel was announced, you're like, oh, I can't wait to see how he brings it all down, you know, takes it all down. At the end of Avatar, I didn't go, I can't wait till the next one. I thought it was a complete story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which makes sense. I think any trilogy back to back or not, is always the second movie is a lot of times is a bridge almost, and a lot of times doesn't there's exceptions to the rule, obviously, but I think that usually the second film doesn't sell as well or doesn't hit the same way. I mean, I can think Iron Man 2, look at that. I mean, you know, they're aiming for a third one.
You mean Avengers 0?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, that's one where it was an obvious they threw Iron Man 2 away to, you know, set up for the event.
Yeah, they're like, look, this is a movie to prepare you for another movie. This isn't really even a movie. I mean, so I think that has a lot to do with it. Vector, you haven't spoken in a while. We need to hear your voice.
That's the same. Everything that Robin said is what I was saying.
That's what Robin said.
Yeah.
Okay. So, our next little bit of news is another Scott Pilgrim tidbit, and that's the interactive trailer. They have really been pushing a ton of stuff for Scott Pilgrim. I know Comic-Con there was a ton of stuff for Scott Pilgrim, and online they're doing a lot of stuff for Scott Pilgrim. And this interactive trailer is almost like a little mini, like Super Nintendo, or not even a Nintendo game. I would say like a just a little mini game, like an 8-bit. Game or something like that, where you have to click on the trailer in certain spots and it'll unlock little info here and there. Has anybody had the chance to check it out?
I did. I thought it was really cute. I thought it was very unique too, especially for the type of movie this is, where they're trying to they did incorporate a lot of old school video game style into it. So I thought it was really cute that they made this trailer that way. But you could watch, you know, if you don't feel like clicking on anything, you could watch the trailer straight through, but it's really cute to like click on, they'll have little things up in the corner and you click on it and it'll open up like a pop-up video type of thing, but it also in the little pop-up there are links and you can click on those and it opens up lengthy featurettes, which is something you would see on say the DVD Blu-ray. So it's really cool that they are doing this up front. You know, you have to wait for the DVD for it. So I thought it was cute.
I think it's a good idea. I think it's a cool idea, but I also think this is a lot of information for before the movie. I mean, I don't even know how the movie's going to be yet, and they're putting out all this information. And I mean, it's not. I'm seeing that a lot of fans and stuff like that will probably enjoy it because they already know the story, but. I'm wondering, I mean, how much information is too much information? I thought the coolest part of the kind of stuff that they've been putting out was the iPhone app, the Scott Pilgrim Punch-Out, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. I've been having a ton of fun with that.
I think I feel, though, that a lot of promotional materials are probably too much in advance. Even though this one, they compacted all into one interactive trailer, so it seems like, oh, there's so much there. But if you look at other movies, they do the same thing. They just space it out more. Like, for instance, The Expendable, they put out 5 behind-the-scenes looks, like 5 behind-the-scenes featurettes already for that movie. And I guess they're you know, I understand they're trying to get the word out for these movies and entice people to go see it, but I feel like after you go see the movie, you realize how much you've already seen in advance. So that is a little annoying, and I guess that's why Justin doesn't watch these things, right, Justin?
Yeah.
I mean, fortunately, Justin's
the yes man today. He's like, yeah.
Well, he's working me like a puppet.
Yeah. He's just like the entourage today. He raised the roof.
Fortunately, like since Comic-Con, I've talked to, you know, several people who have already seen Scott Pilgrim and were amazed, wowed, really, really happy about it. And, you know, if it wasn't for that, I would say I would just be like predicting this movie's doom. Like, it's just it seriously is like an oversaturation of promotional material we've gotten. I mean, maybe it's because I went to Comic-Con and was just assaulted on all fronts by both Scott Pilgrim and True Blood.
Right. And but, Walking Dead.
Walking Dead. Yes. Fortunately, I'm still kind of like, okay, you know, like I know the movie's going to be good because people I know that I appreciate their criticism of movies has seen it already, sneak preview, and really enjoyed it. So I'm not as worried as I was.
No, okay. Say, I think two out of the four people on this podcast have already seen it, actually.
Ah, there you go.
Saw it too, Jenny?
No, I didn't see it.
Who saw it?
Justin already had a screening, right?
Really?
No, I have a screening tomorrow.
Tomorrow, okay.
Oh, okay.
Already had your screening.
Well, I've seen it. I saw it at Comic-Con.
I'll see it on Wednesday.
I loved it. I loved it. But I did notice, I was telling people how, you know, people not in our circles who run websites and podcasts, I was saying, oh, yeah, I got to see Scott Pilgrim at Comic-Con and I really liked it. And people go, what's that? So I realized that probably not on the radar of.
Is that a Thanksgiving tale or?
Yeah. Right after we did the Wishbone, like we talked about the Wishbone and then that was it. But.
How Scott Pilgrim landed on Plymouth Rock.
Exactly.
The new show.
And then I try to explain what Scott Pilgrim is, and I really kind of can't. The movie. You know, I really kind of can't. So, I don't know.
I kind of see what they're doing here. They're not trying to win us to go see the movie, because people like us are probably going to see. I mean, movie fans / comic book fans are going to see this movie. Geeks are going to see this movie. They've already been sold. Most of us. Robin, have you read the books?
I read one and a half. Then I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not a fan of the whole manga thing, but I'm sure the movie is going to be awesome.
It's not manga. It's Canadian. That's what it is.
So, Justin, make sure that you Twitter hateful things at Robin when we get off.
No, I'd never do that.
Make sure you tell him how he hates Scott Pilgrim.
No.
Sure you do it at least once a day.
No, he didn't do what you did when you finished.
Don't even start. Don't even start with me.
He's different than you.
So, moving along from this little tiff, I think they're really aiming for the people that don't know anything about it. And I think a lot of people that I wouldn't have guessed wanted to see it, wants to see it now. In fact, I've loaned my books out quite a few times and they've loved the books. So I'm pretty pumped that it's getting people that have never read a comic at all to read comics, period. Like, no matter what kind they are, I think just getting them to realize that a different medium is actually legitimate is a great thing. So although I do think it's too much saturation and information, I think it might help in some fronts.
Actually, you know, it would be a good thing to go to after you've seen the movie. And I would definitely suggest just sitting there clicking on it like crazy, because all the stuff will just start listing on the bottom of it.
Yeah.
You know?
And then even if you don't get it all, there's a little button that says unlock all, and you can just unlock it all at the end. So, yeah, it's definitely cool. I started to look at some of the stuff, and I was just like, I really don't want to know all this stuff until after I've seen the movie. So I'm going to be going back to it later. So moving on to the next news story is Matthew Vaughn is going to be cutting 12 pages of X-Men First Class after seeing Inception. So Eve, why don't you tell us a little bit about this?
Apparently, he had this whole sequence, 12 pages of his script, where it was going to be similar to, I guess, a dream sequence of some kind, similar to Inception. And then he went to see Inception and realized he had to take it out because it would seem too similar to his movie. I really don't know what, I mean, it's an X-Men movie, so I feel like it really should have, you know, there shouldn't be anything similar to Inception.
Cyclops is going to have to go into zero gravity and get into a fight and start punching people.
They're going
to
beat an elevator?
Yeah.
I mean, what? Exactly. I don't know. So it's like Matthew Vaughn, really. I think Matthew Vaughn was like, you know, I need some publicity for this movie that I'm putting out that people have no faith in. So let me tell them, let me use the secret word, Inception, and it'll be all over the internet. Bing, and there you go. So that's what I think the news is.
I would say Matthew Vaughn considers casting Lindsay Lohan in X-Men First Class might have gotten just as much.
he didn't think of it.
Yeah.
No, but.
I really think that that you're probably onto something, especially considering, I mean, as much as we talk about comic movies, how much do we talk about X-Men First Class? I mean, we kind of did at the beginning of our comics podcast, obviously, because that was like the only thing being announced at the time. But otherwise, I mean, the big movie news and the thing that's pushing everything else out of sight is, you know, Green Lantern, Thor and Captain America.
Right.
Those X-Men is not on on the front of the radar. Everyone is right. More excited for Green Lantern, Thor, and Captain America.
I mean,
and
this might as well be a direct to DVD.
And First Class is not the same. It's a different production company. Am I correct in saying that? Isn't it? That's not Sony. It's Paramount. No, I can't remember.
Justin, get to it.
Well, isn't First Class like farther off? I mean, I'm personally looking forward to seeing what Matthew Vaughn does with it.
No, it's June 2011.
Yeah, it's supposed to be really? With Thor and Captain America, and they're going to have so much trouble promoting that movie. And like I said, I think it's a different production company because someone still owns the rights to X-Men right now that's not Marvel Studios.
Until they sold me as Fox? Kevin Bacon is the villain. That's the
yeah. You know,
they had me at that one.
They had you at Kevin Bacon.
You had me at Kevin Bacon as a villain.
Well, now all they need is John Hamm, and then they can have a nice little restaurant.
Yeah.
So
I just love the quote, though, that Matthew Vaughn said. It was like, he says, "I saw Inception, which I loved, but my heart sank when I saw that a few of the ideas we had were up there on the screen." Oh, I am weeping for him. My heart is broken for him, too. Okay. It's like he's so melodramatic about it.
It might also be an excuse to push off the movie a little bit further than,
because of this movie, we had to rip out 12 pages.
So now we need to rewrite the whole thing. So,
yeah.
But who knows?
I'd push it off till winter. If it's coming out at the same time as Thor and Captain America and Green Lantern, I don't know.
If I was the studio, I would do that. Just the simple fact that. Right. People will probably be seeing Thor and Captain America for a third time before they go see X-Men, you know, First Class. So,
Thor and Captain America don't have Kevin Bacon.
We haven't seen any footage yet. We've seen footage for everything else, but not this one. So, you never know. Maybe we'll be blown away.
Yeah. Who knows? I'll be interested to see what happens, but I think it's going to get pushed off before the end of all this is said and done. So the last little bit of news is Stephen Sommers to return for G.I. Joe 2. I mean, seriously, come on, guys. Are we serious right now? Are we serious?
I thought you hacked and spit on the outline here. I didn't realize that was writing.
I mean, I had fun. Like, I wouldn't say it was a good movie. I had fun in G.I. Joe, but I would probably say the same thing that you were saying, Robin, earlier about Avatar. I thought that was a good enough story that I didn't need to see anymore. You know, I don't want to say it's a good enough story. I had enough fun that I don't want to see anymore.
Well, I think G.I. Joe, the first one here, was better than Transformers 2. That's for sure. And I think that, you know, this movie didn't do too bad, did it? I mean, you guys are the box office guys. I don't think it did poorly. I think people actually liked it. If I recall, it actually got good reviews. So I'm really not surprised that they're going to make a sequel, that's first of all. And second of all, I mean, of course this guy's going to come back. I mean, what else is he going to do?
Yeah. I'm not G.I. Joe. Let's see. I'll tell you.
I mean, it made over $300 million worldwide at the box office. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 302. Yep.
That's pretty good.
That's not bad. I mean, I'm not surprised that they're making another one, but I don't know if I'm... I wasn't very confident in the first one when I screened it at work, I should say. and I definitely wouldn't have. I don't even think I even considered buying the DVD and Blu-ray. And back at that time, I was buying every DVD and Blu-ray. So, that tells me something about it. I mean, I had enough fun, but I really didn't want to watch it again. So
they ruined G.I. Joe. I'm sorry. I watched G.I. Joe as a kid, loved it. It was like one of my favorite cartoons, and boy, it was sad.
It's live it's action. I feel like it's a totally different animal. You have to look at it completely different. No, it's not so faithful.
Not at all.
There's no curmudgeons in the movie, so.
And on top of that, I just found my G.I. Joe fixed with a couple comics that I've been reading that are really, really good. I do Robin, if you ever liked G.I. Joe, I do suggest you go and picking up G.I. Joe, Cobra, or Hearts and Minds, one of the two. Those are both very awesome.
I've read one of those. I read the one with Tomax Zami, and that was good.
Cobra. That was Cobra.
Yeah.
And that one, that's where I'm going to get my G.I. Joe fix, so I probably won't even... I mean, I'll probably see this movie.
I was going to say, don't even say you're not going to see. You
know. Yeah, I was going to say, I see every movie every week, so I don't really have to worry about that. But if I had to go pay for it, I wouldn't go see it. That's for sure.
Except to review it on this podcast, in which case you have no choice.
Mm. I think we would be picking a different movie. whatever Hannah Montana movie comes out.
Right, exactly. Yes. Whatever Miley Cyrus movie is out at that time.
All right, so let's wrap up the news. Every story that you've heard here and tons more can be found at geeksofdoom.com. You can even watch the interactive trailer from the site. So you don't even have to leave the site. You can just go watch all those trailers and read all about all this stuff and tons of more news. And now that we're done with all those news stories, we're going to do a little bit of box office numbers, and that's going to include the top three this time because Step Up got beaten by Inception. That's right. I said it.
I can't believe it.
Inception. What kind of world do we live in?
Exactly.
I mean, I was expecting Step Up 3D to be the number one movie and make $100 million.
That's true.
But we only got one copy of Step Up 3D and actually got two copies of the other guys. And I was kind of expecting, because it was a 3D movie, they were going to push it more, because usually 3Ds, they'll just release more than they really needed to, just so they can get more money. Let me just go ahead and go over this real quick. The other guys topped off the weekend at 35.6. Inception at 18. It was second at 18.6. And Step Up 3D was third at 15.5. And like I said, Inception is at a total, I think this is U.S. gross. Is that right, Justin?
Yeah.
I did a domestic. The domestic is $227.7 million. So it's really killing it right now.
Well deserved.
It's I'm excited. I'm hoping this just keeps Nolan going on his almost, I would almost call it creator own work, instead of picking up franchises and stuff like that. I'd like to see more of his own stories. So let's go ahead and move on to the mini dooms. All right. So first up, Robin, you had something you watched, a couple of things you watched?
Yeah, one I don't really need to say too much about. I heard you talking about Donnie Darko on last Flicks of Doom. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely – that's why I thought it would be worth mentioning that I saw Richard Kelly's latest movie, The Box, which I don't know. I really, really loved Donnie Darko. And after hearing all the really, really terrible reviews about Southland Tales, I decided I'd probably never watch that movie because it can't be that wildly panned without being right. I tried to ignore the panning of The Box because I thought it was an interesting concept. But really what you had is Richard Kelly really trying to be a mix between Hitchcock and David Lynch, and really just turn into a confusing pile of muck. I was sort of enjoying the performances, but I did get kind of confused about, you know, what people's motivations were, why they were doing the things they were doing. So really, I just thought it kind of just sucked. So don't rent it. But the main one that I definitely wanted to mention that's coming out, and I know this is going to kind of betray the geek in me, which I think is pretty much on display all the time, Batman Under the Red Hood. Direct to DVD, so it's not in the theaters or anything. But you have I was kind of worried about this one because you don't have the usual Bruce Timm voice cast playing the different characters of the Batman series like they did in the animated series. You actually have Bruce Greenwood playing Batman, and Jensen Ackles playing the Red Hood. And I actually, it was a great thing because I was actually surprised by this movie. I've never actually read any of the Under the Hood comics, so the surprises, and I will not spoil this if you haven't read any of the comics, but the surprises within this movie really wowed me, and I was like, wow, like, I can't believe they took the story in different ways. And I looked up the story itself, and some people love it. Some people are like, oh, that's spitting on, you know, Batman folklore, Batman legend, to actually twist the story in that way. But all in all, I thought it was a great movie, and really better than what was the last one? The Crisis on Two Earths, mm-hmm. Movie, which was basically just action scene after action scene and nothing really. I mean, I think the last scene with Batman versus the owl or whatever he was was kind of cool. But besides that, it seemed to be just action scene after action scene.
But James Woods was in that one.
Yeah, but Mark Harmon as Superman just ruined it for me. But yeah, Under the Red Hood, definitely check it out. I mean, it was actually, I think it's on par with Mask of the Phantasm. I really think it's just one of the best animated Batman tales I've seen in a while.
Have you watched a lot of these recent DC ones? Or
yeah, and I haven't been thrilled by too many of them. You know.
Oh really?
I mean, we'll name some. I immediately go to Wonder Woman, and I'm thinking I liked Nathan Fillion, and that was about it.
There was Superman, Batman, Public Enemies.
Oh, that was great. Yeah.
There was the Doomsday.
Superman Doomsday.
That sucked.
New Frontier. That one was really good.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Yeah, I liked that one.
We actually did a little a separate podcast for our Comics of Doom about this one, and talked about it a lot. So I'm not going to go too much in detail about what I thought about it, but definitely there's it's actually done by John Winnick, who did the comics originally, Robin. And
oh, nice.
He's doing a new series right now that kind of tells the in between story of what happened, how he came back, kind of. And yeah, it's actually really good. I don't know if Justin agrees with me, but I've been enjoying it. So it's like, I think, 3 issues in, and I would suggest checking that out as well.
I think I will.
I think Red Hood was great. I just saw it for the first time while I was in California for Comic-Con. I loved it. I mean, I know it wasn't, you know, 100% faithful to the comics, but I just thought it was really great. Great story, great production. I just loved everything about it. So.
Yeah, I mean, he actually, I mean, like I said, he wrote the comic originally, so for him to do the movie and change things, I mean, he realizes that they're different mediums, and I think that's what made it good. You know, and you can't do the same thing in a comic that you can do.
And there was no jetpack at the end.
that's right on. I totally agree.
I had a question for Robin real quick. Do you think Richard Kelly is his career shaping up like that of a Shyamalan? With he had Donnie Darko as his first movie, and then 6 years later, Southland Tales, and then The Box after that.
The, the difference between Kelly and Shyamalan is that I actually liked Shyamalan's first three movies. So,
I actually liked the box, but here's what always happens with me, a movie like this. They had me the whole way, and the same thing happened with Shyamalan's Signs. They had me the whole way. They got me with the suspense. They have me curious. I'm following along. I'm on the edge of my seat. And then the reveal comes, and I go, what the f-? You know?
Yeah,
and
I already guessed.
Then they lose me. You know, then they lose me because I'm like, no, no, really?
That's the new one, right? Devils that he's coming out with?
Devil. Yeah. Or something.
Yeah, I already guessed the whole movie. I sat there and I said, yep, one of them's possessed. It's probably the old lady. The whole twist is that they're possessed. It's not a murderer. They're possessed.
I know this is a tangent, but I mean, this is not the first time I've heard people like slam the end of Signs. I actually like the end of Signs. I think it was just as good as the end of War of the Worlds, where like, you know, an alien just kind of like they just die.
Yeah, I agree with you. Know? I liked Signs. I thought Signs was pretty good, and I for some reason kind of liked Lady in the Water. I don't know why I did. I think it was just the start.
No, I mean, with Signs, I wanted it to not be alien. I wanted it to be something. You know, that was the point that got me. Forget about the fact that it's like, oh, yeah, he just keels over for no reason. It's like that's kind of like the writer going, I really have no way to get rid of this alien. So he just can't make it here. He dies. You know, it's like, oh, how lucky, you know, like why can't Jason in Friday the 13th just be like, oh, I'm tired. Oh, I'm keeling over dead, you know. So to me, it's like a major cop out. It's like it'd be great if that were true, but that's a real storytelling cop out. So anyway. So that's Richard Kelly, the box. I feel the same way. I'm like, what the hell is this? And then it gets all trippy, like, you know, you're hallucinating. And I'm just like, I don't, you know, that was
What's going on?
Right. It went from like this really suspenseful movie where, you know, not much is even happening, but it's just really intense. And all of a sudden it's like trippy and weird. And you lost me.
Couldn't be as weird as Imaginary with Dr. Parnassus. let me go ahead and talk about a little movie that Justin has seen before. I don't know if anybody else has seen it.
I've seen it.
Moon.
I've seen it, yeah.
I freaking love this movie. I love it. Love it. It was amazing. And now I can see I didn't really enjoy Sam Rockwell as much as everybody else did in Iron Man 2. So
I didn't at all in Iron Man 2.
You know, I didn't think he was the worst part of the movie or anything in Iron Man 2, but I didn't see what everybody else saw, how he's so great and blah 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 blah. But then when I saw this movie, I was like, okay, this is why people love him, and I now love him as well. He was amazing in this movie, and Kevin Spacey as Gertie was awesome, and just the entire concept of the movie was just the perfection of sci-fi. If you like sci-fi, this is your movie, period. Like, there is no argument. If you like any kind of thing, if you like the Spider-Man clone saga, you'll love this movie. No, I'm just kidding. But I really enjoyed this movie, and I really don't want to give too much away about it. I just want to say it was great, and if you like sci-fi, you will definitely love this movie. If you just like good actors, you know, doing their thing, you'll like this movie.
And it's old school sci-fi. It's not big action, lasers, things blowing up. This is like your Asimov kind of storytelling.
It's like
Alien.
Yeah, it's Alien. It's like intriguing. Let me see where this is going, kind of thing.
Yeah. Now, have you actually read up about this movie? I mean, there's supposed to be like a sequel in the works.
I have not read up a lot about it, but if there is, I will watch it. That's for sure.
And it's not exactly going to concern, you know, that story that happened in Moon, more as like that kind of happens in the background of and it's basically it takes place on Earth, you know, in that world, you know, and that kind of happens in the background and you know, repercussions affect the characters that are the leads. They might be
showing like a scene where they're at the base command or whatever, and you see Sam Rockwell saying something he said in the first one or something like that.
Yeah,
kind of thing. That I'd be interested to see because I was really
wait. That would be a prequel.
No, actually, it really they said, like, basically, you know, there's a reason why Sam Rockwell would be on the news after this movie. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see basically Sam Rockwell's character on the news in the background of this movie, and, you know, the repercussions after. So it really, it is a sequel.
Yeah, I can see where this would be very, very interesting concept. And just seeing, like, just seeing the way, like, the moon base worked and what they were doing with it and everything like that, and the kind of, like, the company kind of aspect to it, I would be really interested to see what happens on the Earth, or what's going, how it works on the Earth and how everything is going on the Earth. So I'd be interested in seeing that.
Mm-hmm. Forget about good sci-fi movies. Let's talk about this awesome movie that Justin saw this weekend.
I saw it as well.
Yeah. And you, in 3D.
Yeah.
Sure, but Justin went twice, so...
No. I probably...
I think he did.
Yeah. See, I think he went.
For the dancing.
I think he went. I think he went 3D times.
Yeah.
All right. So, Justin, why don't you give us a synopsis of Step Up?
3D? You know what? Why don't you not give us a synopsis? And it's unimportant. Unimportant.
No, this is very interesting. I want to hear how he explains this movie, because I don't even know what happened. And I watched it, so.
Well, there's a couple different plot lines that are going on in the movie. You have Moose, the kid who is in the second Step Up movie, coming of age, going to college with his young friend. Who
Guys,
is
pay
also
attention.
You need to make
sure you're counting the amount.
Wait, I'm taking notes.
Yeah, I was going to say, count the amount of storylines.
I'm wondering where Squirrel is.
Camille Gage is his friend who was in the first movie, and she played the sister in of the previous character.
Don't forget her storyline.
She's got a whole thing where she's trying to be on her own and step up and have new friends and be studious, while Moose just wants to dance.
Get it, guys? She's stepping up.
So there's that plot line where Moose and Camille have their storyline, and they've been friends their whole life, and now there's a romantic spark between them, but neither of them actually sees it. Only their friends see it. Then there's the other storyline of the group of dancers, and this is the one that you see on the main poster, the guy and the girl. They have a whole dance crew. She comes in. She's an outsider and comes into their crew. And they're trying to win this battle because they're 5 months behind on their rent payment. And the guy on the poster, he's a filmmaker, and he loves dance, and he wants to film all these guys and turn that. And he wants to go to film school.
So we're up to like six storylines now.
Yeah. And so those are the main ones.
Directed by Richard Kelly?
No!
I'm telling you right now, there is more storylines in this movie than Robin's been on podcasts.
No!
So that's a lot. That's quite a few storylines, you know.
So basically, like Inception, it's a film that you need to really go see several times if you want to catch everything.
Yeah.
No, I really think you don't even need to see it more than once. I don't even think you need to pay attention to the storylines. I just think it was quite ridiculous and out there. The story was, like, not very well put together at all. But the 3D and the dance scenes, I have to say, it's worth seeing just for those alone. I think they're really cool. I've got to say, I enjoyed myself. I wouldn't pay the price to see it in 3D, though, so I wouldn't suggest going and paying $15 if you have to pay $15. But if you can get someone to take you on a date and go see
it. Wait, this movie was $15?
No, I'm just saying most theaters nowadays, like,
that
if you're
going to go
see it.
That means it was $20 by me. That means
$15. No, I'm saying, like, if most places, usually it's like $10 for a night showing, and then it's like, there's some theaters that are like $5 for the 3D charge or whatever. So it comes out to be like $15 normally for a 3D movie. If I could, I know there's different areas. Like my area, it's like $13, but that's just my area though.
If you could just explain something to me. I mean, obviously if you have to prove something, you want to make sure everybody knows about it, you got to step up, right?
Yes.
And if somebody comes back at you and says, yo, you ain't nothing. We saw what it was. We got even better. Obviously, you have to step up twice.
You have to step up, yes.
Maybe even if it happens outside, you might have to even do it to the streets.
Yeah.
Okay, but what exactly would make you want to step up three times?
No, it's not three times. It's 3D times.
Three-dimensional.
Three-dimensional.
Yeah.
But I honestly, I do have to say, and I'm sure Justin will. I'm not sure if he'll agree or not. But I think the 3D and the dance were really cool. I think it was fun to see that. But I definitely would not, if I had to pay full price to see that movie, even if it was, you know, just full price without the 3D upcharge, I probably still wouldn't have paid. But it was kind of cool to see the 3D stuff, and the fact that they filmed in 3D instead of up converting it actually made it look really great.
Yeah, this was the second best 3D I've seen this year, only behind How to Train Your Dragon.
The 3D effects are seriously cool, and like this guy does this like robot kind of. I almost like my eyeballs almost fell out of my head. It was so cool.
You know, it's kind of sad that they would put this kind of love and attention into the 3D of a Step Up movie where essentially they're like, they're breakdance fighting, as they say in Zoolander. Yeah. And you're going to put that much money and effort to do it right, but yet a movie like Clash of the Titans and Last Airbender,
like someone saw it on the screen,
right?
And then they said, "This is 3D."
Right. It's like it amazes me. It absolutely amazes me.
Well, I don't think it's too amazing because Clash of Titans was a $125 million budget, and Step Up was a $30 million budget, and a third of that was for the 3D effects. So this is a much lower budget. So it was a lot easier to do the 3D.
Yeah. I have no like misconceptions that this movie was a terrible storyline and a terrible, like the Moose and the main guy, I don't even remember what the freaking main guy's name is. I like Moose; he's a good actor. I think I would watch him like in another movie by himself where there isn't 17.
Adam Savini. I like that kid. He did a Michael Jackson thriller on. If you go on YouTube and look him up, he did and they shot an entire like replica of Thriller, but with updated dance moves. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it.
I think he is cool, but I think like the 17 storylines were ridiculous, and the fact that he meets this guy and that guy's like, "Come join my crew and live with me," and he's like, "Yeah, that's cool. That sounds good. I'll do that tomorrow." Like, we're best friends now, you know.
Yeah.
And then they know each other for a week, and they're like divulging their deepest, darkest secrets, and like it's freaking ridiculous. But like I said, the 3D and the dance moves were really cool.
Nobody's going to see this for the storyline. And if you do, if anyone out there is listening and you're interested in the storyline for Step Up, our friend Wonder Rob from the Entertainment Overload podcast.
He probably loved the story, actually.
He was so disappointed because the story didn't make sense. And I said, that's like going to Twilight for the acting or something. It doesn't make any sense. Why would you do that? The whole purpose of Step Up is the dance scenes. And it would be like going to a Fast and the Furious and you don't pay attention during the racing. Like, he wasn't paying attention during the dance scene.
It'd be like going to Scary Movie and saying, man, why do they keep making fun of these people? Yeah. Ugh.
It didn't make any sense to me. It was like, you question the logic of them dancing, but you have to look at it like a musical. When someone in a musical starts singing, they just break out in song. You don't say, oh, that's ridiculous, because it's a musical. You know it's ridiculous. It's supposed to be that way. That's how the dancing is in Step Up. Don't pay attention to the story, guys, because like Jen said, the story is ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense, and it's full of cliches. There's nothing that's new. You can guess the ending from a mile away, but the dancing is cool, and the 3D is cool, and I will say it's actually worth it just to see the 3D. I would say it's not worth it to see it in 2D. I would say rent it if you're going to see it on 2D. I would say it's worth seeing in the theater in 3D because it's something that you're not going to get at home. And it's almost like going to a theme park. And I was telling Eve, it kind of reminded me of Captain EO, except for without the Michael Jackson dancing and without Michael Jackson singing. But that same type of experience of seeing something that's you haven't seen before. So well done on the 3D.
So, Eve, you're last up for our mini-dooms. What did you want to talk about?
Actually, I went this weekend. I had to work this weekend, so I didn't get to see the other guys, which you guys are going to review in a minute. So, what I did is I watched as many movies as I could possibly do so over the weekend here and there. And one of the movies I finally got to see that I've never seen before is Memento. I know. And it is a movie that I have been told so many times I have to see. And believe me, I've been wanting to see it like crazy. And just for whatever reason, I just never did. So this weekend, I decided I was going to bang out a lot of films that.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Yeah, there you go. So that's the one I'm choosing to speak about today because I know you guys have been waiting for me to see it, and I absolutely loved it. And I'm glad that it holds up over time. It's not one of these things where you had to see it when it came out. It's like nope, it's still going strong today. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I actually was able to follow it very well. I mean, people have told me, you might get confused. You might not understand what's happening. And, my mom, who falls asleep at every movie, she said, it's confusing, And I said, did you fall asleep? Well, yeah, just for like 5 minutes. And I was like, well, that's all it takes, during this movie. If you fall asleep for you cannot get up to go to the bathroom. You have to pause the DVD if you're getting up. You can't miss a minute. And I thought it was a lot of fun to, the movie is told in reverse order, so you see the ending first, and then it goes back. It reminded me of that Seinfeld episode, remember where they go to India, and you see the whole episode is like what happened leading up to their trip to India. And so that's what this movie was like. It was told, the star of the movie, Guy Pearce, I forgot his name in the movie. I don't even know if they have Leonard, that was it. Leonard, he has this memory loss condition where he can't make new memories, and so he has short-term memory loss. But he remembers his life before this happened to him, this condition happened to him. So it's this whole string of events leading up to what happens at the end of the movie. And I just thought it was like really interesting how he does things to remind himself when, whenever he forgets. He's got notes, he's got things written on him, he's got tattoos, and I just loved, like, all the clues that he leaves for himself. I thought it was so awesome. I really enjoyed going along with him piecing the clues together. A few things I felt like, oh, how does he know, like, he's got all those Polaroids, and I'm always thinking, like, how does he know to even check for the Polaroids, or how does he even know to check for the notes he leaves him? Because you would think he wakes up every day and goes, like, who am I, where am I, like, that kind of thing, like, how does he know to check for the notes? That's what I was wondering.
His long-term memory, his short-term memory. In his long-term memory, he knows that his short-term memory is gone, I would believe.
How is that? That was my only real question about the movie, is that how does he know that he has this condition if when you get this condition, you no longer could make new memories?
I'll just, from my point of view, I know that I'm married, but I may forget that our anniversary is next week, So
yeah. I don't know if that's
long term versus short term.
I don't think so. I don't think that's the same.
I mean, he could very well have been predicted to have this thing that would kill his short term.
No, because it was an before. Incident. Remember, they kept saying the incident, made this happen.
So maybe he remembers the incident and remembers that it did something to him.
Well, he remembers all about his condition. Every time he bumps into someone, he's like, hey, I don't know if you know. And he goes into the whole spiel about his condition.
Yeah, that might be the last thing he remembered, though. I mean, I think you have to have some sort of suspension of disbelief with a guy.
No, I'm fine with – whole thing is a suspension. So I'm fine with that. But that was really
– I would think that would be the last thing he remembers. Like the last thing he remembers
is suspension. That was really my only thing that I said. Like, I kept going, how does he know he has this if he has it? It's like one of those weird contradictions type of things. But
yeah.
Stephen Tobolowsky was in this movie, and I love him. And I just love it when I didn't even know he was in this movie, and all of a sudden he's in the movie, and I'm like, awesome. I just love it when he just appears in a movie. And I loved his character, and I loved that whole storyline about his character. I absolutely loved it. And, I don't want to say my theories about it because that would be in spoiler territory, but I thought it was a great movie. I definitely think so far that's Nolan's best movie that I've seen of his, definitely.
Hmm. Interesting.
I would say that was I don't know. I would say that was. I don't know. That's hard. It's very hard to say because I'd probably put Inception first, and then Memento, and then Batman's.
Well, come on, are you forgetting The Prestige?
I haven't even watched that yet, actually.
I thought Prestige was good, but I read the book, and I thought the book was a little more...
I didn't even know that was believable,
I guess. Like, the movie was really out there, I thought. But I mean, it was a good movie. It was filmed well, you know, as far as his directing, that was done well. But as far as, I feel like, as far as movies that you would see again and again, obviously, I think I would watch The Dark Knight again and again and again. But Memento was definitely, I don't know, I felt like it was more of his qualities stood out in that movie. Like, for instance, I don't think Nolan does action well. And I typically don't enjoy the action in his movies. So this movie, you know, Memento wasn't action-driven. So I think that's why I probably like it the best of
truck flipping at someone's face is not good action?
Wow. Come on, Batman fighting in the dark. I mean, come on, that wasn't great.
In the dark, exactly.
Like, what is going on?
So... What about an Inception where they're wearing white outfits in the snow and they're running and that's real life.
They're trying. Both of those things are like what would you want to wear black in the snow? Like
But that's like
if
saying,
you're getting shot at.
Horror movie that takes place in the dark, that I guess it should be completely a black screen and you can't see anything happening. That's realistic.
Well, with Batman, that's kind of the way it needs to be. You're not supposed to be able to.
No, but it's not even about how dark it is, because that's another story. It's also about like how quick the cuts are, and everything is always so muddled. You never can see who's getting hit, who's moving this way, who's moving that way. I just think it's too fast, and it's just not enjoyable whatsoever.
Yeah, as an audience member, you're supposed to be able to see the stuff. The villains, they're not supposed to see the Batman.
Right.
I don't know. I think the Batman is shot that way specifically so that you could see the perspective of why Batman is scary and stuff like that.
But
that's different. If you were going to talk about Inception, we've already had this discussion. I disagree with you. I think everything I saw, I understood, and all the action, I understood as well. So.
Oh yeah, me too.
The white in the snow didn't bother me at all. I think it wouldn't make sense to put them in red. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wouldn't make sense to put them in black. In Batman, I think you're looking at it from he specifically wanted you to look at it from a perspective of how realistically you would feel to see these people and feel what they feel and see what kind of people they are, how that would realistically fit.
Well, so. I think if he's ever up for criminal charges, you should be on his counsel.
That's just me personally. I'm not saying the man is a god. I'm just saying I never had any problems with his action in any form or fashion. And a semi truck is awesome action flying at someone's face. That's not
people. I think he's mostly not that good at shooting people in action sequences.
Yeah, that was a good wide shot, definitely. But the fighting and the whole. Going up to, you know, fighting his way to the Joker, that was really like hard to understand. Just saying.
Like I said, I think there was a purpose.
Jen doesn't allow people to say anything bad.
No, I'm just saying I think there was a purpose to it. You may disagree, and that's cool, but I think there was a purpose to it.
Anyway,
then again, if you have a problem with the snow scenes in Inception, you may have a problem with the snow scenes in Empire Strikes Back. Just saying.
Burn.
I don't think so, because it's not like I'm retarded and can't see a person wearing a white jacket while they're in the snow. That's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about how it's cut. And
I thought it smelled bad.
George Lucas just cut 12 pages from The Empire Strikes
Back. On the outside.
Right. Anyway, Memento is on Netflix Instant right now. That's how I watched it.
Yes.
And so if anyone out there wants to see it and you have Netflix, you can watch it now. And we all recommend it, I think, right?
I do.
Definitely. Okay.
So let's move on to our Doom of the Week. So this week, myself, Justin, and Robin all got to see The Other Guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, Robin, you want to give us a rundown on the movie?
Sure. Well, there's these two cops, and they are awesome, and everybody loves them. Unfortunately, it is not the heroes of this tale. The heroes of this tale are the other guys, the guys that do all the paperwork for the heroes. If this was Bad Boys, these guys would be basically in the corner of any scene involving Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. but yeah, this is all about how the other guys get their shot at, you know, solving the big case. Unfortunately, the big case is a big, sucky boredom fest. That's my synopsis.
I'm gonna have to go ahead and say that I really enjoyed this movie, actually.
Okay.
I had a ton of fun. I really like. I think that the whole entire point of this movie was to be completely and totally ridiculously over the top, like to the extreme. And I think that anything that was done, said, or even thought about in this movie was so over the top that it just I couldn't stop laughing. I think I had to change my pants about four times in the movie because I kept peeing when I was laughing so hard. I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was just freaking hilarious, and the casting was one of my favorite parts. I mean, there's just tons and tons of people. Samuel L. Jackson, Dwayne Johnson,
Mendes.
Derek Jeter was in here. That was actually quite a funny part. Yeah, Eva Mendes, Will Ferrell, Mark Wahlberg, Damon Wayans Jr., Rob Riggle, Joshua Church, David Gideon, Sarah Chase, Andrew. I mean, there's just way so many people in this movie, and so funny, and just it was. I couldn't stop laughing the entire movie. Like it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Justin, what did you think?
I really enjoyed the first half or two thirds of the movie, but near the end, when they had to focus on the plot of what was going on, that's when it kind of lost momentum for me. And the last, I don't know, like I said, half or third of the movie really dragged for me at the end there. But it was not enough to disregard the first part of the movie, which I really loved. And there was moments where I was crying, especially during there's a scene where they are quiet fighting. They're fighting and they can't make noise. And I've seen the movie twice now. Both times I had tears in my eyes and I could not breathe. I was laughing so hard, especially with Michael Keaton's character. And Michael Keaton was the star of the movie for me. He was my favorite. I could, every time he came on screen, I started laughing. So that was my favorite part of the movie.
I don't want no scrubs.
Yeah.
Robin, what was your overall impression of the movie?
I'm a real big fan of Adam McKay movies, and I really, really liked this trailer. Unfortunately, there were probably only a handful of things I could say were worth watching the movie for if you haven't seen the trailer. If you've already seen the trailer, I would say the lion versus shark argument. Oh, yeah. That was hilarious.
That was improv too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Oh. I thought, is it Rob Riggle and Damon Wayans Jr. that are the other paracops?
Other guys.
Yep. I mean, they were more annoying than funny. I just, the only scene I liked them in was the classroom scene, which was pretty funny.
My favorite line, one of my favorite lines of the entire movie was from Damon Wayans Jr. And it was, "Hope you like prison food and penis." I was like, what?
Jen actually called me and said that to me on the phone.
Yeah, that's the first thing I said to him when he answered the phone.
I was like, what's going on here?
But the thing is, it's like, you get this, the buddy cop thing, it's like, you know, like they're bringing it back. It's kind of like, I haven't seen Cop Out, but supposedly this is better.
Oh, yeah. So
I'm really worried about Cop Out.
Better than Cop Out. This is what Cop Out should have been.
Yeah.
So it's a big callback to those, you know, buddy cop movies, but, you know, to make it even funnier, like, you know, whereas Lethal Weapon is like, you know, action with comedy. This kind of movie is kind of like comedy with action in it. Mark Wahlberg kept going, drug dealers, you know, and I really hoped it was drug dealers because this Ponzi thing, which I carried on through the end into the credits, which made absolutely no sense of why they put those in there. I'll explain in a second, but like, I just thought the whole, like, I'm like, so Steve Coogan stole some money and we're supposed to be like, oh gosh, we got to save his life from these other people who we don't care about. And Anne Heche, who kind of frequently pops up here and there. I'm wondering what's her deal. I mean, I guess, you know, going into an Adam McKay movie and looking for like a strong like villain is probably not the best idea. But I mean, it was a cop movie and we're supposed to follow them, you know, we were kind of rooting for them to beat the bad guys. But it's like in the end, it's like, who cares? You know, I'd rather see like over the top action sequences with The Rock and Samuel L. Jackson. But yeah, we get to
Rad to see the. Not the other guys, the real
I would
guys.
Rather see the guys.
Yeah. Okay.
Which they were even more over so the top. Funny. And yeah, they were even more over the top. I mean, like when they, spoiler warning, but when they're like, oh, let's bushes to the left, yep, and then there's like no bushes. Like that was, and then they're like, there wasn't even an awning. Why did they do that?
Like, yeah. That really made no sense. I mean, I guess that was played more for shock value, but.
I think your complaint is one of the things that I don't even remember like what the whole Ponzi scheme was about. I wasn't even paying attention to it because I was just laughing at how ridiculous they were like that.
It seemed like it was an important thing to do because their credit sequence, rather than having, you know, funny bloopers and stuff, was all about how much the United States has gotten screwed by like all these different, you know, Ponzi schemes.
That was very weird. Like, that was very.
What are they trying to do? Are they trying to make a point or something? It was a whole slideshow.
Yeah, it was very. It's very weird that they did that. Like, I don't. Whatever. If they were trying to get a message across, it definitely did not get across to me because I wasn't paying attention to anything but the jokes. Like, I don't. I can see where your complaint comes from, and I would probably say if I was paying attention to the story, I probably would have. But I honestly, I didn't even. I didn't even think about who the bad guy was or anything. I was just like laughing so hard. I wasn't even
even with the jokes. I felt like there's another movie on the cutting room floor. It felt like there was something missing. And I don't know if you guys remember, but there's one scene where Will Ferrell, they're talking about the Russian waters and Will Ferrell was, when he went to Steve Coogan's office, he got these waters and he was like, give him a Russian water.
With
and,
a cucumber. Yeah.
Will Ferrell was, oh, this is really good. Well, I mean, the joke is Russian water is like vodka. So I think he was supposed to be getting drunk. That's why he liked it so much. But that joke never paid off. It was like, then they just cut away. So I feel like there's a lot of stuff like that that was there. It's there, but it was just cut out for whatever reason.
I completely agree with you. It's a PG-13 movie. That's why.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That and on top of that, I mean, when you have Will Ferrell, like, I'm sure there was like 20 takes that had different jokes in them. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
We're going to see one heck of an unrated cut, I think.
I think so, too. Did you guys stay till the end of the credits?
No.
Yeah.
I got bored by the slideshow.
Yeah, there was a scene at the end, by
the way. Yeah,
there's a blue one
at the very end. They're in the Chinese restaurant, and Will Ferrell's trying to speak Chinese, and Mark Wahlberg can't keep a straight face.
he couldn't stop like from laughing.
Yeah.
So
I had to sit through An Inconvenient Truth to get to it. I would have done it, but my wife was looking at me like, is this supposed to be funny?
Yeah. The only thing I did like about that end credit sequence was the Pimps Don't Cry song that plays over the end credit sequence.
Don't cry.
Which I bought from iTunes for 99 cents after I got out, and I was very proud of myself. So
nice.
Bye,
you didn't
Sheila.
Let Hunter know you spent 99 cents, right?
I'll let Hunter Camp, our other host on Comics of Doom, know that because he thinks $3 is expensive. So one-third the price, Hunter.
But, I mean, overall, I would say, like, if I don't know. If you're looking for a good story, you're going to the wrong place. That's for sure. I mean, I don't know. I think that if you're just going in there for the laughs, then you're going to have a great freaking time, because I think just it was joke after joke after joke. I wasn't even paying attention to the
enemy. I know I laughed a lot more during this than I did for Dinner for Schmucks the previous week.
Yeah, I would say the same thing, even though I actually probably liked Dinner for Schmucks a little bit more than you did. But I would still say the same thing.
Yeah.
But I think this was one of the funniest movies of the year so far, which is not really saying much because we really didn't have a lot of
only other comedy I can think of is Hot Tub Time Machine this whole year.
And then what was there? Date Night came out this year, right? Was that last year?
I forgot about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It came out this year.
Oh, I think Date Night was better.
I enjoyed Date Night, but I think this one was a little bit better than Date Night. I liked both Dinner for Schmucks and Date Night, but I don't think that's the style of comedy America's. I think this actually is more the style of comedy America's is enjoying more nowadays than they are.
Yeah. This is definitely a Will Ferrell vehicle. Like, if you don't like Will Ferrell's style of comedy, then you're not going to like the other guys, because it's him doing the same character, the angry shouting.
I agree with both of you guys. I think that this will be one heck of a DVD and a lot of freaking bloopers and a lot of freaking different takes and maybe even a director's cut that's different. I could see them even doing, I bet you anything, there's going to be like some sort of mockumentary on the two Samuel L. Jackson and Dwayne Johnson. Or if not that, then they might probably be planning on doing a separate movie for them. Because I could see them spinning that off. I agree with you guys. I didn't dislike this movie because I didn't see more of it, but I would want to see a Samuel L. Jackson, Dwayne Johnson movie. that they were just...
Maybe the other guy is set up the way Iron Man 2 is for Avengers.
I think they might make the guys next.
The guys, yeah.
But I think that would be a ridiculous movie, and it would be really funny.
Sam Jackson was on Jimmy Fallon the week that the movie came out, and he was saying he wants to do it as well.
Whatever that's worth.
Yeah,
And it's good to see Dwayne Johnson in something other than a kid's, you know, Tooth Fairy movie or crap like that.
Turn to Witch Mountain.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's been in so many kids' movies lately, like this, and then what's next for him? Faster, I think it's called.
The other one. Fast and the Furious. Yeah,
it's not Fast and the Furious, is it?
What was it? There's another one that he's doing too. There's another one that they just released pictures for today.
The movie that he's doing next is called Faster, I thought. It's a poster in the preview I saw.
Fast Five. That's the next Fast and the Furious movie. It's called Fast Five.
Oh, he's going to be in that? Oh.
Yeah, he's going to be in that. It's coming out next year.
Oh, boy.
Wow, how have we not mocked the hell out of that title yet? Wow.
Yep.
Fast Five Null Destination.
And I can't wait until Step Up Four the Kids, and then Step Up Five Alive. Yeah.
Five Null.
Yeah.
Wait, so it's going to be little step ups?
Yeah. Baby steps.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to see Faster. That's for sure. Because I've been missing Dwayne Johnson in some action stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I would say if you are looking for a laugh and not too seriously looking into the movie, that you could probably go enjoy this movie.
Yeah,
I say the laughs are not enough to support some of the humdrum plot that they try to dish out to you during the last half of it, I would say.
And Justin?
Bye, Sheila.
Maybe you didn't hear me. Bye, Terry.
Eva Mendes was great.
Yeah.
Oh, that whole sequence was great. So, all right. So I think that pretty much wraps it up for this time, guys.
Woo!
Thank you for joining us, Robin. You want to tell us where we can find you?
Thank you for having me. You can find me at www.mediajunkyard.com. That's the podcast. And my Twitter is at RobinMJ.
So, Eve, do you want to tell us how they can contact us?
That would be geeksofdoom.com.
Twitter.com/flicksofdoom. And email us at flicksofdoom@gmail.com.
Yeah!
Flicks one and X.
Alrighty. And from all of us here at the Flicks of Doom podcast, thanks for joining us, and have a great day.
Yeah!
So, Eve, do you want to tell them how they can talk? Eve!
Tell us!
I'm not saying it, so you're saying it.
You're saying.
Eve.
You say it.
You say it.
Justin.